Chapter 10, The Legend of Fierce Folk Ironheart. After this incident in their journey, a new interest and a new care entered into Marie's life, or rather into the twins' lives, for the strong affection between Marie and Henry had only been deepened by their joint suffering and responsibility, and neither had a thought or an anxiety unshared by the other. The new interest was, of course, Leonore. She was a constant subject of wonder or amusement. Her violent party feeling shocked the St. Croix children, who had been brought up in very different principles, and could not understand how a Protestant could bear such intense hatred to all Roman Catholics as she seemed to do. If they passed a crucifix, she would rail at it for a graven image, and even fling stones in the hope of breaking it, until she saw that this really distressed them. She declaimed violently against the king, the pope, and all the saints in the same breath, and laughed away all attempts at anything like argument. Gloom, though as quiet as ever, had wakened into actual animation under the influence of the friendship which the capricious young countess bestowed chiefly upon him. The two were always together, often a little in advance of the other three, and both being excellent walkers, they made extra little excursions whenever the wayside was particularly beautiful. Often, when it was drawing near the time for their midday meal, the three others would come suddenly upon Gloom and Leonore, whom they had lost sight of for a short time, and would find their dinner daintily spread out and sheltered from the sun, while Leonore would be lying full length in the most comfortable nook, and Gloom fanning her with a great green branch. She possessed a lovely voice, too, clear, fresh, and strong, and as a de St. Croix it was necessarily to be a singer, though since their troubles for the four children had scarcely had the heart to sing. Leonore had not been 2 days with them before she discovered their neglected talent, and gave them no rest till they had sung her all their songs and learned many of hers. They used to march along the road singing Marat psalms for an hour together, and then, with a merry laugh, Leonore would break away suddenly, calling Gloom to follow her. She had a passion for flowers, and at every resting place wove fresh ones into her hat and hair, in which she wore loose like Marie. Then, after supper, when they camped for the night, they fell into a habit of singing together, either in part or in unison, for a lengthened half hour, our evening concert, they grew to call it. And in after days, perhaps no part of that memorable journey was remembered by them with such regretful affection as those evening concerts, when the day's journey was over and they leaned back at their ease in the starry summer twilight, often without a fire in that warm, fragrant air, and sang together the stirring psalms of the Reformed. Sometimes, if Leonore, in her changeful moods, was disinclined to sing, they ceased after the first two or three songs, and Gloom spun out his marvelous tales, as much to Leonore's satisfaction as the rest. Or at another time, Leonore, who had been well taught and knew a number of exquisite songs, would begin alone and hold the others, children though they still were, entranced by the beauty of her voice and words. One evening she was unusually silent, and lay back on the grass, refusing to allow that she was tired, but scarcely joining at all in the songs which they commenced as usual. It was a lovely night, warm and clear, with a bright moon. The five children were sitting in a little sheltered hollow, aside from the road, which here ran through a chain of low, uncultivated hills. They had not walked quite so far as usual that day, as being short of food and seeing no signs of human habitation, they had stopped to fish for at least an hour before sunset. Then Leonore had been in her blithest mood, and while Henry cleaned the fish, she and Gloom had collected plenty of dead wood for a fire, and had found this nook to sleep in. Since tea, however, she had spoken little, and even repulsed Gloom when he would have moved some dry grass to place her head more comfortably. "Why do you stop?" she asked, as finding that she did not join, they did not begin a fresh song. "What would you like to sing, Leonore?" asked Henry gently. She was silent for a moment, and then said in a tone so soft and gentle that it was scarcely seemed to belong to Leonore, "I do not know how it is. My heart is full of song, and yet I cannot sing with you tonight. I am thinking of a song that I used to sing in the old days, a song of the Villeneuves and a prophecy." "Sing it to us now, dear Leonore," said Marie. "I do not know if I can," asked Leonore, and there was again silence for some moments. Then she sat up suddenly, half kneeling, with the moonlight on her tawny hair and in her strange, brilliant eyes, a look also on her face which they had never seen before. She began to sing, began in a low, sweet voice, which gradually rose to its full power, or sunk wailingly as the song went on. It was a kind of legend that she sang the story of a black deed done by one of the early ancestors of the Villeneuve race, how Fulk de Villeneuve, a fierce man and mighty in war, married a fair young wife, who trembled and wept on her wedding day, how, after that she had borne him a son, Satan found means to kindle dark and unjust suspicions in the breast of Fulk Ironheart, how that he had made a great feast in his castle, and had bidden his fair young wife robe herself right royally to do him honor, how he had caused a great stake to be planted, ere the morning of the fete should dawn, before the castle windows, and how one watching had seen dark forms flit to and fro the whole night piling faggots round it, how, when the day was brightest, and the people thronged to the feast, there were laid out great tables groaning with good cheer, and the red wine flowed like water, and there were music and great merrymaking, and how, when the feast was over and the people waited, fierce Fulk Ironheart rose up before them all, and taking his fair wife's hand they went in a grand procession out from the castle to the stake. How the dark, shrouded figures, devils were they all, had appeared then from the pile, and had taken and bound that fair lady in the sight of all the people. How the flames rose up fiercely around her, and all the people wept and cried to Fulk Ironheart to save her, though none stirred to do so from terror of his name. How he laughed as he strode back into the castle, and bade the soldiers strike up some sparkling music for the dance. How the heavens grew dark and muttered, as the people went away lamenting for the death of that fair lady, how all that night long the babe wept sore, and would not be comforted. How in the pale dawn of the morning, when only the nurse watched by the wailing babe, there stood by his cradle suddenly and without sound a tall white figure, and the nurse knew it for the figure of her dead lady, and she bent over the babe and signed his brow with the sign of the cross, and his wailing was stilled. How the nurse heard her speak strange words, and knew that she laid a curse upon the house of de Villeneuve, and that every wife of their race should die before her time, and that one in every generation should perish by a violent death, until in the 5th century the race should end in a woman, and perish out of the land. How, when she had finished speaking, she bent down to kiss the babe, and he fell asleep with a smile on his face, but she faded away as the sunlight touched her and was never seen again. The long twilight deepened into night. The fire burned low, and still Leonore knelt and sang with a voice which went out far into the night, or sunk with a wail more sweet and sorrowful than they had ever heard before. All listened in a breathless hush, till the exquisite notes quivered with an undertone of horror at the close of the song. Then no one moved or spoke, till Leonore, who at the last faltering word had bowed down her face till it was hidden in her knees, suddenly sprung up, exclaiming in her usual clear, decided tones, "Pardon me, Amice. I did not intend to sing you such a doleful rhyme. I do not know what moved me so." And then, with a little nervous laugh, she went out of the hollow into the moonlight and left them. Gollum sprung up and ran to the entrance of the hollow, where he paused, evidently keeping Leonor in sight, but hesitating whether to follow her. Marie turned her beautiful eyes to Henry, and so full of vague awe and horror that it helped him to conquer the strange eerie feeling with which Leonor's song had led him. "Marie, dear Marie," he said quickly, "don't look like that. It was only a strange old legend that she sang, nothing that anyone need care for now." "If it should be a prophecy," gasped Marie, "it is the 5th century. "Don't let it trouble you, chère petite sœur," answered her brother tenderly. "It does not often trouble Leonor, you see. All happens as God wills, not according to the legendary curse of some poor wronged woman." "It may be so," sighed Marie, "but I am glad that we have no de St. Croix legend so terrible. Where do you think Leonor has gone, Henry?" "She is all right," said Henry, who was much more concerned for his sister than for the last Countess of Villeneuve. "Gollum will not lose sight of her, and she will be back to go to bed directly, as we should all have done before this. Lewis have been sound asleep for some time." "Yes, but it is not like Lewis to fall asleep while the singing is going on," said Marie, her attention instantly diverted, as Henry meant it should be, and when she looked down at the little fellow lying like a fair waxen figure at her side, with the moonlight on his white face and golden curls. "He looks very tired, don't you think so, Henry?" she added wistfully. "Oh, no, Marie, it is only that you are tired, and ready to fancy all sorts of dreadful things tonight," answered Henry, and with a cheerfulness which he could ill feign, and for he had been very anxious about Lewis for some days past, only he did not wish Marie to dwell upon it tonight. "Come, darling," he went on coaxingly, "give me the brush, and let me begin to do your hair. Leonora will be back directly and want you to go to sleep at once." He had scarcely spoken when Leonor and Gollum came back together, laughing and talking as if they had been doing nothing else all the evening. "Ah, you have begun already," exclaimed Leonor, throwing herself down on the bank. "Come, Gollum, make haste. We are dreadfully late." Gollum obediently took the brush, which his sister handed to him, and set to work on Leonor's mass of hair, which was always far more tangled than Marie's. But ever since the first night, when he had seen Henry acting tirewoman to his sister, this imperious young countess had claimed the like service from Gollum, and as he had never by look or gesture expressed the smallest disinclination, it grew to be considered by all of them as a mere matter of course. It was not long after that, before they lay down to rest, and in spite of all that might have troubled them, slept the sound sleep of tired, healthy youth.